Delphine and Nick, thank you so much for coming today. I know this is a situation where sometimes we feel like we're outside of our comfort zone. And to be very honest with you, this is the kind of show where I want you to kind of get out of your comfort zone a little bit. You guys are very well known to be the people behind Team Angel Wolf, you and Rio and Tia. I will get into that and I'll allow you guys to talk about it a little bit more because you guys are the people that know most about it. What I'm interested in now is, very quickly, I will introduce Nick. Nick Watson, born in the UK.
Yeah.
Grew up between the UK and France.
Yes.
Yes. Studied art and design, which is something I didn't know about you. I studied art and design.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Funny that we're doing nothing to do with art and design. but it's always in there, right? It's always in there, the art
There's
and design.
There's a story there. It's going to come back very soon.
Okay, cool. ex-commando in the Royal Marines.
Correct.
I want to talk a little bit about your events. So individually, you have made it to Kona Ironman. To people that don't know what Kona Ironman is, can you very quickly talk about it to explain it?
Yeah, look, it's like the pinnacle of triathlon. It's the world championships, a race that happens once a year in Kona in Hawaii. It's the race that all the pros obviously are there to win. It's a 3.8 kilometer open water swim. It's a 180 kilometer cycle in can be very tough conditions in Hawaii, especially with the winds. And then a very hot marathon, 42K to run at the end. So the only way you can get there as a age grouper or amateur athlete, if you're not professional, professional also need to qualify. You have to qualify in a time in another sanctioned Ironman branded race around the world within the year of that race that's coming. And it's always in October, the World Championships. So say, for example, you have to go to Australia in your age group, there'll be a certain amount of spaces that there'll be allocated to get to Kona. So there might be five spaces for my age group. You have to qualify. So you have to be in those top five. Then you get a slot for Kona.
Fantastic. What year was that?
2002.
Wow. How old are you now?
Too old. 51.
So you're a holder, currently holding two Guinness World Records?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
For 5 kilometer, 10 kilometer swim, open water?
Yep.
And pulling Rio on a kayak?
Yep.
Fantastic. We'll get into that.
Thank you.
17 half Ironman distances.
18 since the weekend.
18 since the weekend. Correct. And over 200 racing events of all different types.
I'm going to have to 380 now.
Well, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we're not going to talk about all of those because we don't have time.
Okay.
So when you're not training and racing, you are giving free community programs and activities and motivational talks about bringing awareness to people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that word later on because it's something that we would like to... to address. Delphine Watson.
Hi.
Funny enough is when I asked you, what do you do? What did you say? I want you to tell me what you said.
Well, I laughed because I was thinking, well, there was a Delphine previously and there's a Delphine now. The previous Delphine would have been very different, but this Delphine, oftentimes I'm the unpaid personal assistant of Nick, his wife, and assistant with Team Angel Wolf. Rio, I'm his mum, his caregiver, and Tia, her mum, and guide with her schooling.
Okay, fantastic. What would you say your role entails as a personal assistant, first and foremost?
I'm there to look after everybody else's needs, I think, with Nick, if you're saying Nick first, to help with his work with Team Angel Wolf.
Okay.
Doing a lot of the work behind the scenes on that.
Okay.
And be it with administration, doing with writing. If it's at races, I'm the one that gets up an hour before everybody else. Well, not now, but up for everyone else. Getting, because we need.
And that's really early because you guys start racing.
I need a bit of time to get myself ready, and then, you know, I've got to get Rio's breakfast ready. I've got to get everything organised. get everything ready for Rio. It's like we're racing this weekend, so before I came here, I was getting things ready for when we leave tomorrow. At the races, I'm in really behind the scenes. You don't see that often in videos, but I'm there behind the scenes and, you know, waiting for Rio to come in transition so I can change him, feed him. I look after him before they race, and when they finish, I look after him then. So there's a lot of...
There's a lot.
And then she gets given a camera, so we obviously always want to take footage, so there she's trying to do video clips and photos. Yeah. So there's, you know, obviously without Delphine, the whole complexity of what we do doesn't
absolutely
work.
The glue.
It's key, 100%. The trousers.
Yeah. Wow. And most of the people that are the glue don't really want to say that they're the glue.
No. Not at all.
Okay, so talk to me about Team Angel Wolf really quickly, if you can, please.
Okay, so a real quick story. Healthcare a few years ago, 2014, they found a lump in my colon. 6 centimetres long, which was a bit life-changing. If it stayed there, I probably wouldn't be here. So obviously, cancer. Removed that, woke up in the hospital. Delphine was there. First words I said to her, I want to go back to Kona. A bit life-changing me. I hadn't really been in the triathlon scene for a while. We'd opened up a new business, etc. Life just got in the way. And said, look, I want, for myself, I want to go back and get to the World Championships, qualify, etc. And the goal was then to find a race, because you can't automatically go to Kona. I previously explained that you have to go to another race. So we picked Barcelona, September. It was about 6 months out. And that was the goal, prep and get ready for this race. And for those that need to qualify, or those that even do an Ironman distance, you're talking a minimum 25 hours a week in training. So it's a lot.
Just so people understand, how many hours a day?
Look, you need at least 3 hours a day.
Okay.
And you need to...
That's just training?
Just training.
But so there's also other aspects of this. There's nutrition, there's all that.
They all naturally fall into place, but the training is key. So obviously you need to, you know, you need to spread your week out in obviously swimming, cycling, running. Obviously there's different disciplines that need to be longer than others. Obviously the cycling, because we've got to cover 180 kilometers on the day. So, you know, it's quite complex, and you have to, you know, you need 9 months. You need 9 months, good months, to prep for a distance like an Ironman.
Okay.
So the body adapts to that, you know, that, so it peaks when you're there to race.
Yes.
So that was the goal. We had 6 months. So I was like, look, I can make this happen. But we're... A lot of things were also happening in our own life, business, company. We're running our own health and fitness company at the time, having a couple of challenges there, and life and training just wasn't perfect. And then one day, Delphine just turned around to me and said, look, have you ever thought about racing with Rio? And I was like, cool, how am I going to do that? Typical male, you know, there's some logistics, you know, I need to, how am I going to swim, how am I going to cycle, and then how am I going to run? And then... did all our research, and a fantastic team back in the 80s called Rick and Dick Hoyt. Unfortunately, Dick Hoyt passed away a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He used to race with his son, and he was in Kona, the first father and son duo across the finish line. And it was just epic. So you just kind of start to research, okay, I need a kayak, I need the bike, etc. We started looking into it, and then we kind of said, okay, if we can't do Barcelona, let's look at another local race, because logistically traveling with Rio and all this equipment, let's see what was here. So we planned Dubai International Triathlon. It was on the 7th of November 2014. It was a 1.9 swim, 90k bike, 21k run. And literally things came together quite close up to the date of race day. We didn't have the equipment, so we reached out to the community, which was just fantastic. So we ended up getting a kayak, getting a bike, getting obviously the push chair. Hardly done any practice. Literally, most of the equipment came 2 weeks before the race. Hardly had time to even practice the bike. And then we did our first race, crossed the finish line, watched this little 12-year-old, biggest smile on his face.
That's amazing.
Loved it.
And that's how Team Angel Wolf came about.
That's kind of where it started. So it wasn't, you know, we didn't go out to make Team Angel Wolf. We started to race. We also had no idea would Rio enjoy this. You know what I mean? We'd gone out and we'd done, you know, this kind of triathlon together. And then all of a sudden, when we were racing, not only just before, during and after, we just started to see what an impact it was having on other athletes. You know, people were so engaged, so, I wouldn't say impressed, but they were just, they loved that this father and son, this little duo, were doing this something together. And for me, it was, that's what I wanted to do with Rio. Mm. And, you know, I always love to tell this story. The changing point of when it almost became Teenage Wolf was our second race. So we did something called Challenge Dubai, same distance. It was in the February afterwards. 1.9 swim, 90K bike, 21K run. And another big race, you know, 2,500 competitors. Pros down, obviously, had to come from all around the world to come and race as well. Fantastic. So this is race number two. Rio's still 12, this little boy. So we wake up in the morning and the weather conditions are terrible. You know, Dubai's been hit by this big sandstorm. We get down to the beach, big swells, big waves. They ended up cutting the swim, as in it was supposed to go a little bit further past the breakwater, but the seas were so tough.
I raced the same race.
You did Challenge Dubai? Yeah. No way. Okay, yeah. then you know the story.
Yeah.
So we get down there, and I'll be honest with you, we get in the water, and at that time, like the first race, I've got a friend to follow me in a stand-up paddleboard, because we've always said, when we started racing, Rio's our priority to make sure he's safe. And if he wants to stop, we stop. Fantastic, done. So we get on the swim, and I'll be honest with you, it is probably the hardest swim I've done to date. Huge waves, and you can imagine, because I'm attached to the kayak, every time I go over the wave, the kayak's still behind me, so it's kind of pulling me backwards. And then I go over the wave, and the kind of kayak's almost catching me up. And I'm like, oh, this is just horrendous. But we managed to get through the swim, get on the bike, and the bike is sandstorm. And at the time, Rhea, I think, probably weighed about 30, 35 kilos, you know, this little boy. My bike weighs 35 kilos, so I push about 60, 70 kilos on the bike. So for those that cycle, you know, there's some luxury bikes out there, weigh about 6 or 7 kilos of carbon fiber.
And people complain about 0.5 kilos.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Trying to lose a few grams here. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So when there's a sandstorm, the resistance is so hard. It's tough. But we get on the bike and we're 60K in, and there's this moment in life that's changed, and it's probably why I'm still so here now. I'm starting to think, is Rio okay? You know, who am I doing this for? Am I doing this triathlon for me? Or am I doing it for the community? Or am I doing it to make sure, obviously, Rio's happy?
Sort of an existential question at that moment.
It's huge, and I'm tired and I'm fatigued, and I'm like thinking, you know what? And I'm kind of thinking, you know, we've been out there for a long time. And in my head, I'm like, Delphine said, look, if Rio wants to stop, we stop, 100%. And I'm like, and there's this moment where I'm on the bike, I'm on the tri-bars, Rio sits in front of me, he turns around, looks at me, and his eyes are all bloodshot from the sand. And I'm thinking, oh, God, what am I doing to my little boy? And I'm getting really worried, and I'm kind of expecting him to say, Dad, finish, halas, finish, you know, let's play ping pong or something, you know, do something else. And I go, and I'm expecting it, because I'm thinking, we've done one race, we've got the medal, got a t-shirt, brilliant, we've done a triathlon together. And he just turns around and looks at me and he just says, Dada, I love you. And then looks forward. And it breaks me. I'm like, oh my God, we found something that he loves. And, you know, we had 30K left on the bike, we get on the run, and yeah, we finished that race, and that was the starting point. And that's when I realised we found something together.
And then he signed even more when you finished the finish.
Yeah,
line.
Even worse. We get to the finish line, I'm absolutely broken. So we've been out there for like 6.5, 7 hours. And so we, absolutely fantastic on the race organiser. We get there and there's loads of food and stuff. And I'm like, I just need to sit down, I need to get some food. And I'm trying to get Rio out of the chair, and he's going, Dada, no more, more. And I'm like, come on, Rio, we're done. I want to go home now. Loves it. And since then, we just started to race. And then we thought, how can we do this full time? We had some issues with the previous companies. And we lost them, unfortunately, absolutely annihilated us financially. And we had to start again. We had to start again on a new path. And we saw what an impact what we were doing. We thought, how do we do this? How could we do this full time? So we set Team Angel off as a non-profit foundation here with the Community Development Authority, the CDA. And our goal is very simple. Our goal is to make sure that everyone is included into the community. We do our kind of versions through sport to make sure everyone's included. And then hopefully we inspire people to get fit, to get healthy, and, you know, create a story. So that's how Team Angel started.
How did you feel on that day?
We have a pact. If Rio ever looks unhappy, or we know if Rio doesn't want to do something, he will let us know somehow. Yeah. So I had enough trust in the situation that if Rio wanted to stop, Nick would stop. So that challenge was actually okay. That first race, it was probably the longest break I've ever had in ages. Because when they're racing, I'm doing all the things, but then I wait.
You had a moment.
And I don't normally get time to myself. I'm normally the one looking after Rio. And that, to be honest with you, it was a change around in our family, major turnaround. Because pre all the cancer scares and all the things that happened, Nick had been so involved in work. And I really felt like, I don't know what I'm saying, but I was like a single mum at home looking after childhood with disabilities. And it was all on me. You know, Nick would work long hours, come back, and it was me doing everything. And then suddenly, finding something where they were both happy, they found their mutual bond, and it was what I couldn't interfere, you know, because normally if Nick, being so used to looking after Rio on my own, when Nick would be at the weekends or try and help, I'd interfere in, and it would all get annoying and we'd all argue because I should have left them to do their own thing. But in the racing, it was their thing, and they found something they could really bond over, and that was really beautiful.
And then there is Tia.
Yeah, beautiful
tear. Beautiful tear. Beautiful, powerful tear. Mm. Just watching the video, we're just discussing it. I can't wait to see her race properly on her own, maybe one day to see what kind of timing she has or whatever. But what you guys do is just amazing. Can you please talk to me a little bit about, from a parenting perspective, I think people nowadays kind of struggle to have siblings get along. Let alone do the things that Tia and Rio do together.
Okay.
Just so that I can pre-frame that, Tia does exactly what you do now, where she does a full race with her brother, running, cycling, swimming, all of it, and she's doing it really well. So. I just want to understand what was your strategy, there's that word again, on how you were, and I'm specifically asking you, Delphine, because you probably were, and excuse me for saying that, probably the main caretaker for both of them. What was your strategy in having your son and daughter be so cohesive?
There was no purposeful strategy, it just kind of naturally went into place. I think, especially since the first race happened, and even before then, but when work wasn't involved, when we did things together always. And we kind of, even it's got more so over the years because our concern is about segregation and inclusion, and we don't want Rio to be segregated in life, so it's kind of, we have this attitude, well, we all go. If Rio's not allowed to go, we don't go. You know, it's like we're a whole package. And I think Tia's just, for her, that's ordinary how she's been brought up. We're together. So I think she's used to spending, she doesn't know Rio any other way. So it's, she once said to us, how old was she, about the brothers and sisters, which is 9, I think.
9.
She'd gone for a sleepover at a friend's house. Mm. And she came back and goes, gosh, they just, the two sisters, they argue all the time. And she goes, I'm so lucky. She goes, I think everybody should have a brother or sister with disabilities, because like Rio's just, he never bullies me, he never, you know, he fights in this and that, and we just laugh and have fun. And she just saw it from that perspective, and she couldn't understand why these brothers or sisters were arguing all the time. Mm. And for her, it was, she saw it from a different perspective, and she's just used to that we're always together.
Mm.
And I think that's,
has become a sense of ordinary to her, and what does that answer what you were
saying? Absolutely. I mean, what I pick up on there is this sense of we're always together. Mm-hmm. That alone in itself is a strategy, because I think the way I see and I work with a lot of individuals that belong to family units, of course, at the end of the day you belong to something, and they struggle to have this togetherness in this modern day where there's so much technology and everybody's on their phone in a separate room, couples, brothers, sisters, siblings, people aren't as connected as they used to be. But what's important for me to extract is this togetherness that you guys experience. Where does it come from? So let's say, for example, did you ever have to have a conversation with Atiya regarding Rio being slightly different than other kids? Did that ever happen?
No, we never had a sit-down conversation for me to tell her about it, because she's the younger sibling. Mm. And she's grown up knowing this is the way Rio is. Mm. And she has asked me now the questions, well, what's Rio's condition called? Or she'll ask specific questions, but it makes her very aware and observant of other people.
How do you answer that question?
As honestly as I can. That's the one thing I think we're very, very honest about things at home. Mm. I've never hidden anything from her. She'll talk about what happens when Rio dies one day, you know, and she'll bring things up, or, you know, asking about Nick's cancer, could have daddy have died from, you know, and I have a thing of not lying. Mm. Sometimes I have not filter it, but I'd be very careful how I phrase my words, but I'll always be honest, and I think that's one thing that as a family we've tried to
I think that's very important to highlight, because a lot of times as parents we try to protect them from the truth. Mm. But in reality, we're doing them a disservice because we are just delaying the inevitable where they find out. And it's better to bring them up that way with the truth gradually, like you're saying, and being aware of what you can say, what you can't say.
But I think that's the thing. When she's at home, I think if she asks anything, I'll always answer to the best of my ability. I'll never hide anything. And but she's the same back, though. I mean, I don't know if this is because that's how we brought her up, but when people go through the teenage years, it's well known that you might lie to your parents or something other, but Tia's actually brutally honest with us.
It's quite
like sometimes
frightening.
She wants to down and tells every single conversation she's had with people. I think, I really don't need to know. But she just wants to express everything and say everything, and I really respect her for doing that and needing to do that, but that's her angle of being brutally honest back as well. Yes. And it's so I'm not sure that's just because she thinks that's how we do it, or because that's her character.
Can I just jump in with the whole being together and the togetherness? One thing that I think we've realised as a couple, I'd left the Royal Marines and I went on this personal training sports therapy course, and Delphine was on the course. That's where we met each other.
Okay.
Long time ago. And obviously when we started dating each other from the offset, because we'd gone on this course together, we had the same common interest. So then obviously we started to see each other. There was a little bit of time when I went back to the Royal Marines, I finished my service, and then obviously came back and obviously was with Delphine. And literally from that day onwards, we've basically spent the majority of our life together. We've been in the same industry, so obviously we set up our first company together. It's not as if we've ever done something different, that I've gone to travel. We've probably spent, I wouldn't even know, 3 months apart, you know, on days apart where we've traveled in the whole time that we've been together over the 20 years, you know, and I think, sorry?
Longer than that.
You think so?
What, together?
No, I mean, longer than that. And I think that's the norm of how we're always together. We're at home, we work together. It's not as if I disappear to the office. There was a time, obviously, when we had a few companies as well, but our time and life has always been together. So when Tia came along, Rio came along, everything that we do is together. We never no one would ever consider, oh, we're going to go and do this for the weekend, you know. And even if Tia goes out for the afternoon, we miss her. We're like, oh my God, my dad's all, where's Tia? I think that's what has brought this bond so close together, and that's why I think where Tia's just become this personality, as she's, you know, she's a really important part of this little chemistry that happens between the whole family unit.
But this is where we went off track though as well. I think when Maria was born, we started like that.
Mm.
And then when Maria was born and we started a company exactly the same time, and I couldn't be as involved with it, because then when we realised Rio had all these needs that we had to take care of, I took on that role of doing that, so I was less involved in the company, and that's where we went off track. And then when you had your tumour, that's when it kind of, it took something for us to realise that, and we got that.
One of the things that I notice with a lot of these conversations I have is how people that are performing at a certain level or are able to maintain their performance, whether it's in a relationship or parenting or careers or entrepreneurs, or you guys have all of that combined together, is this ability to reframe negative situations into something positive. Can we talk about that a little bit from your experience? Because you guys have had some adversities in your life, like everybody else, and I'd like to know what your philosophy is when it comes to that.
It's a bit like when life gives you lemons and you make lemonade, isn't it? It kind of goes back to the... I actually had to put that down to Nicolot. We've had so many times we've been completely knocked down. And I can emotionally just be at rock bottom at that point. I can be the one, I see no hope, I see no light, this is it, what are we going to do? But he's the one that will always find a way out of it. He's always, and I don't know how you do it, but you do, you always kind of find to it. And then you'll come up with an idea, and I think then together we help mould it. But he's the one that always stands up first from the floor and can lead us into another direction. But maybe it's a direction.
You're a commando. I'd be worried if you weren't getting up first.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Look, I don't know. I never really. I don't know if I have a solution. You know, if that makes sense. I suppose the thing that I look at, and we talk about being creative. I think, like any situation that happens in life, I'm always looking for, you know, the next stepping stone, how to evolve anything that happens in life, being it positive, being it negative. You know, like I said, we lost two companies. You can't be bankrupt here, but financially lost everything on the first occasion, which is something we put our life into, picked ourselves up, then looked at another opportunity. So again, you're trying to evolve from that, engaged into something else, and unfortunately that all fell apart, and again, financially wrecked us as well. So you're always looking, maybe it's the creativity, maybe it's the entrepreneur, maybe it's that spirit of, you know, having to survive all the time. You know, even with obviously when Rio came to our lives, you know, how can we make this work for Rio, for the family? So I think when it happens in business, it happens in life, you're always looking for something, not necessarily on the horizon. It was always looking for, you know, how could we adapt to this situation? This has happened to us, but there's got to be something better out there, because we're at rock bottom. You know, you can't put food on the table. You know, the electricity is about to be cut off. So you've got to find a solution. And maybe maybe it's a father's instinct. You know, you're the bread earner. You know, I'm there to make sure the family has that net over them, that they feel secure. They have the fundamentals of what do we need in life, you know. You know, water, food and shelter, you know, that's my job. How do I do that? How do I make this work? And I think, you know, you just keep, I don't ponder about stuff too much. I'm like, okay, what's next? How can I find a solution? I try and not stay in that place for a long time, because it will wreck me. And I have to admit, there have been occasions in my life where I've gone, I should throw the towel in, you know, myself. But I can't be there for too long, because,
what I'm interested in. I'm interested in this moment you're saying, that moment. How does it switch from that to I'm not going to ponder, right? I'm picking up on your words. Right?
Yeah.
And the way I phrase it is fear and a lot of the negative emotions exist in the past. They don't really exist in the current moment.
Sure.
So when we are experiencing this crippling emotional negativity, let's call it that way, we're actually thinking about something that doesn't exist right now. We're thinking most of the time we're living in the past, right?
100%.
So what you're saying is I'm cutting off this past and I'm getting into this present moment.
Mm.
How do you do that?
I have no idea. I'll be honest with you, and I would love to know even that solution. Okay. One thing I think I've learned, and I'm sure this will come up in today, is one thing that I love about Rio is he lives in the moment. He, from our understanding, and he's nonverbal, that he has no concern about the past. What happened yesterday? You know, we did a 70.3 on Saturday, tier race with Rio on Friday. Sunday, he's probably just thinking about, it's almost lunchtime, you know, it's food, you know. And he lives this moment. And I think I've learned that from him. And I think I've learned that from my father, you know, enjoy every moment that you have possibly got. And not necessarily look forward to the future, but live now, live in this moment. And I suppose that's when I'm in that moment, I'm planning. You know, what's next? What's next? And I'm a thinker. I'm very OCD. I like to have strategy. I like to have things going on in my head. I like to dream. I like to think, oh, you know, this may be a potential of something else might happen. Maybe something good that would come out of it. And I'm looking at everything as an opportunity. Anything in life, you know, it could be beneficial to who we are and what we do and the family as well. So, but I don't know. I don't know what's that. There's something good. There's something good out there. You know what I mean? This has to happen. We put so much time and effort and love into what we do. This has to work. Get knocked down again. That was just a little hiccup. Let's get on with it. Let's try again. But I don't know. I'm sure there'd be someone out there that would probably be able to write a lovely summary of what happened. But
that's exactly what happens.
Really? Okay.
Just enjoying them. I mean, at the end of the day, that's exactly what it's all about. It's about casting away too much time and energy invested in thinking, worrying about the future, or living in the past.
100%.
And be in the present moment, because that's where you have access to insight. This is where you have access to your creativity. This is where you have access to all these things. As soon as you start getting into the past or the future where all these negative emotions exist, what ends up happening is you lose the ability to have these fine acuities and be able to think and all of that because of how we're made as human beings. Okay. So absolutely beautiful. Okay. Delphine, so I understand the fact that you're saying that you get emotional in these perspectives. And don't think that he doesn't have that negative emotional response when things happen. Of course he does. He picks himself up in a way and he moves on. You in your own time pick yourself up and you move on. I'd like to know, how do you manage, regardless of whether you've picked up yourself, because taking care of Rio and taking care of Tia doesn't need a break, right? So when you wake up in the morning and there's been so much adversity, how do you wake up in the morning and get into that frame of mind?
I need to be honest here.
What guides you?
Mornings I struggle.
Okay.
Because if I'm in a very low mood, that morning's always my hardest point of the day. Because I'll wake up, I don't sleep very well, and every worry and stress will suddenly come up. I live more from, and I should choose not to live like that, but I do live in a place of fear, and I just wish I could overcome that and move on.
Mm.
And it depends, not always like that, but it depends what wave we're in. But it's funny, if Nick's really low, then I'm not the one who's low. We can reverse that quite quickly.
We work really well together.
But then there's so much to do in the day, and I have a routine going. The busier I am, I can't dwell on those things. So that's how I think I pass on from that. It's like, you know, Rio needs feeding. Rio needs to go to the toilet. Rio needs this. You know, I've got schoolwork to do with Tia. And it's
It's when there's not a routine, then that can go a bit pear-shaped and all the emotions come in. And
It's very interesting that you're saying that, because one of the first strategies we work on with clients that come and see me who are living in fear and anxiety, for whatever reason they're living fear and anxiety, is to install a routine immediately, a morning and a night routine, so that when they're waking up in the morning, there is this boundary that they set with their emotions where they don't allow it to access. First and foremost, acknowledge and be aware, and then install that strategy and that routine for you to be able to kind of, okay, get back into that zone. So it's very interesting that you're saying a routine is actually what brings you into it.
Yeah.
I just would like to, maybe we can talk offline on how we can give you a routine to kind of very quickly come back to that within yourself first and foremost. Because what's important is, and I think a lot of my conversations with mothers, especially, specifically, is that it is selfish for us to kind of feel good, because first and foremost, I need to make everybody else feel good, right? And it's this concept of serving from an empty cup versus serving from a full cup. That cup can be filled within 30 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and we can talk about that. But it is very, very important for us to kind of fill that cup so we're able to give from that cup. And unfortunately, there is this perception in our society that being there for yourself first and foremost is sort of seen as selfish, you know? But in reality, this is the most selfless act that you can do for yourself and for everybody else and for God and spirituality and consciousness or whatever you want to call it. Because when you come at it, when you come at the day from this as much as possible positive perspective, everything changes. Your reality actually changes. You start seeing things differently, you know? What time do you guys go to bed, by the way, really quickly? Sure, of course, please.
The issue is when you step away and do something for yourself and you feel so good, I step back into the routine and it's a reality kick. And it's like, oh. And I always have that fear that if I step away, I'm not going to want to come back in again, because I've had a taste of freedom. And it's that fear that, you know, freedom's actually quite nice. Do I want to go back into... Because I was saying before to you earlier, this is not just, you know, Rio's 18, most people my age, their kids going off to university, doing something the other. I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life, or the rest of Rio's life, being a caregiver, being, you know, a full-time mum, feeding, changing nappies, doing this, that and the other. I'm going to be 70 with a 40-year-old child. So sometimes it's more frightening to step away to do something for myself because of the reality of having to come back in. It's like when people come to visit you from abroad, it's so exciting to see them, but I almost dread them coming to have to say that goodbye again, because I find that I said goodbye to heart rate. It's almost easier that they don't come, so I don't have to get so upset. And it's that same kind of... Which I know there's a strategy around dealing with that, but sometimes that's why I think maybe people in my shoes avoid doing that for themselves, because it's so hard to get back in.
And there's always an element of guilt, enormously, when Delphine goes and does something for herself. She's like, oh, I need to get back. It's like, no, just enjoy. Turn that switch yourself off. True?
I think I have a lack of self-worth as well, which probably isn't happening.
No, these are things that are all usually very connected. And that's all I'm telling you. It all comes back to this essence of I cannot give love, I cannot give freedom, I cannot give joy unless I experience it first. And a lot of people that don't experience it for these reasons. It's conditioning. A lot of times you will see that see it in their family. A lot of times you'll see it in their environment that they grew up, where they were taught that self-worth or self-love is selfish, right? This is where it comes from, the root cause of it. And a lot of the work we do with a lot of mothers is installing that, because once that is reprogrammed and reconditioned, magic happens. Because all of a sudden, I'm not saying by any means that you're going to go back home and everything is going to be, you know, magically different and all of that. I'm just saying that this is not a thing where it happens once. Once you do it once, twice, three times, a month, a year, 2 years, it becomes part of your day, just like your other routine is. But the only difference is that you are getting a step up because you're coming at it positively.
Yeah.
And then eventually what ends up happening is you're like, oh, okay, you know, actually it's starting to feel good. You know, every once in a while, I'm going to take an hour and go to the spa. You know, no more guilt, no more whatever, because it's just, it's the way our brain is wired.
Yeah.
Right? Scientifically, what happens is your neurons are in your brain are wired a certain way. And every time, this is what we call a comfort zone, right? And every time you install a new habit or try to install a habit, you're challenging the status quo, right? And your body wants to come back to that protection mode, right? So the more you start undoing that, the more your neurons start kind of untangling and reattaching in a certain way. But that takes time, right? And that's why a routine is very important, because that routine kind of installs it every day, every day, every day. Then all of a sudden it becomes, that's just how it is. And then eventually you start realizing, like I was saying, that, okay, feeling good feels good, you know? And then eventually you start thinking, you know, I need some of that throughout the day. So what happens is we start balancing out adversity with positive stuff during the day, so that we're not spiking up and down with our emotions. What we're doing is we're becoming more resilient, and what we need to do is find a strategy to kind of bring ourselves up with awareness of how we're feeling and what our emotions are telling us, because emotions is just a message from our body and our mind of what our status is.
And finding balance as well.
Exactly. That's what it is. It is balance.
That's my thing as well, because then I feel guilty for actually doing what I do, because I don't want to be a role model to my daughter doing the behaviour that I'm doing, because I don't want her to take that on and think that's the way that a woman should be. So yes. It's that awareness of everything.
Yes. That goes along the genealogy line that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. We pass it on to our children, whatever we've been passed on. This concept called conscious parenting. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. So just quickly, so we follow that track. Conscious parenting is based on the fact that you are not allowing your unconscious programming to come into what you are doing consciously right now. So with parenting, how are we not allowing the stuff that has been passed on to us to pass on to our kids? And it all starts with this awareness, the awareness of us understanding that we are actually doing this. Once we have that awareness, then to kind of start installing strategies to break that cycle, because it is a kind of a cycle that goes on. Yeah. This is also one of the cycles that we are on this earth having this human experience to break, to be able to recreate our future in a way that we want to, rather than we've been programmed to, right? One of the things that's been happening over the last few years, of course, is dealing with the pandemic and how different governments and countries are dealing with the situation. And it was beautiful, this togetherness conversation that we had, but in specific to being, I hate this word, but confined in a space together. How can we actually switch it from survival mode to thrival mode, where we're actually enjoying each other's company, where we are actually benefiting from the situation?
Well, look, I think for us, nothing really changed that much. So home life, Rio's at home. Tia is schooled at home. So we spent a lot of time anyway. So lockdown being at home, that worked. Didn't really interrupt our lives too much. The only difference was Rio. Rio just couldn't understand why he's at home all the time, because obviously, especially in the initial lockdowns, no one was allowed outside. That put an enormous amount of stress definitely on Rio. He had a few seizures. He had one that scared the living daylights out of us. Never really seen him like that. We thought we were going to lose him at home one day. He started convulsing and went into this unconscious state. So I think that was just spent up from being indoors, him not understanding that he's, why is he not allowed to go for a walk where he normally would do on a daily basis. But we tried to combat the best we possibly could and the things that we do as Team Angel Wolf. So we started to do some activities at home. Started to get Rio involved. We do something called Climb with Rio. So I climb Burj Khalifa with Rio on my back, the equivalent of too many times up and down our stairs. It wasn't easy. And then we kind of thought, wow, because that kind of was lovely. It went viral because people kind of realized they could do stuff as family. They could do activities. They could make it inclusive. So we started that as a monthly program. We do it every month. We go to a different continent. We pick a landmark, a tower, and we climb with Rio. But at the same time, we're going out to schools, kids, companies, and saying, join us, join in that continent. You can do it virtually. Obviously, this month we're in South America. Again, we're just trying to think things differently. How can we do this virtually? How can we inspire people by being active, being inclusive? And even when we do the climbs, we say, look, even if someone's in a wheelchair, they could join us. They could go up and down their living room if it's real strict lockdown. That is a distance. It's 50 meters in one direction. So that's 50 meters elevation. Come back. So we're always climbing up and down, and then we reach the top of whatever that goal is.
You know, that's very interesting that you're mentioning that, because how people can take this situation as a learning process or as something to evolve, rather than, you know, sit down, feel sorry for themselves, and not understand that there is a reason behind this. There is something that's being told to us, you know? At the end of the day, the only species on Earth that struggled with this was humans. Yeah. The rest of the planet was having a party. They're having a field day, you know?
But it's also allowed us over the last year to think about our purpose, you know, to think about Team Angel Wolf as an organization, the terminology, how we talk, what inclusion is, how we deal with inclusion. And it's allowed us to, I wouldn't say reinvent ourselves, but it's allowed us to develop and move
forward. What's your
purpose? Mine personally? Yeah. I want to make a difference on this planet, and I want to make sure that everyone, irrelevant from who you are, where you're from, whatever your background is, you're all included, and we do things together. And I think COVID's taught us that. The importance of family, the importance of friends. When times are tough, we need to be surrounded by a network of loved ones. And everyone should be loving each other.
Delphine? Sorry, cut you. Delphine,
no, it's all right.
what's your purpose?
One is to keep learning. I think this last year, especially since lockdown, because I said we've been really re-looking over things and thinking, you know, what is it we believe in? And I think I've still got a lot of learning. I feel I've got a lot of learning to do. And I feel that's one of my purposes, to keep on learning and developing. And to do that, I feel there's a lot of that to do with inclusion. But personally, I've got a lot of development to do. But then also, my purpose is for my children, to help guide them. And I can't tell them what to do, but just to be there as a guide and to help them through their next stage.
Beautiful. Final question. It's a question that I like to ask all my guests. So I've created something called the Ascension Method, which is the method where I work with my clients to empower them, basically, to be the best versions of themselves and experience joy and freedom while they're doing that. So the Ascension Method has been developed to empower humans, right, to be the best versions of themselves. What does human empowerment mean to you guys individually, Delphine?
Freedom, choice, following your passion. I do that because I'm thinking of Rio. I feel Rio's empowered because we've been very fortunate to find his passion in life is racing. And I see him looking empowered when he's racing.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose it comes back to the being an artist, being creative, just loving what you do. And I think in life, we've all gone in one big circle, and I'm back to the things I'm loving now later on in life. So health and fitness and sport, okay, we've always been in the industry, but now I'm doing it not just for myself. I'm doing it with my son, I'm doing it with my family, and that's empowering a lot of other people as well.
Beautiful. Well, guys, I want to say thank you so much for being here. I'm very honored to have you both.
Pleasure.
Of course, I'm watching you guys like a hawk. and watching everything you're doing and all of your achievements. I'm very proud of you. Very proud of your kids too. And I hope we maybe shoot another episode sometime soon. I don't know.
100%. Bring little Wolf along.
Yes.
To you.
Would love to. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.